It was October this past. I was heading back to Panama City Beach, Florida, going back for vacation. I had come home the weekend and preached and ministered, and after church that Sunday, I was going back down. My tom-tom told me that there was an hour and a half delay on 285 for road construction and advised me that I needed to take an alternative route and go through Atlanta and hit 85 on the south side. I said, sounds like a good idea to me. I don't like hour and a half delays. But everybody else, tom-tom told them to do the same thing. So I'm going through Atlanta in my truck, and it's a 6-speed, and bumper to bumper, stop and go traffic, you know. And so you can imagine, and I've talked about how driving frustrates me with like that anyway. But in the middle of Atlanta, my phone rang. I have it laying on the side so I can hear it because in my diesel, it sometimes doesn't always die out. And so I look at it, and I recognize the person calling, or the number, and it's from an old friend from the second grade. I knew, though, that it wasn't him calling, and the reason is because a year or year and a half prior to that time, he had had a malignant brain tumor, and he had had brain surgery. And since that time, he just wouldn't talk on the phone. It had done some damage to his memory. It had done some damage to his communication skills. And so I would call, though, every month or so to check on him and see how he's doing. And his wife would always answer. She had a cell. And so she would always answer, or she would return my call. And I knew that she wasn't returning a call because I hadn't done one in a while. So I knew it was going to be his wife. His wife's name is Terry. So I answer it. I say, hello, is this Terry? And she said, hi, Delbert. She said, I thought you needed to know that we had to put Darrell into hospice. Darrell is my friend. And I said, oh, no, Terry. I said, I thought he was doing so well. Judy and I had gone down about 4 months, 5 months prior to that and had visited with him. And he seemed to be doing well. I thought he was going to get over it and do just fine, but. So it was, you ever had something in your life that just took the wind right out of you, the life out of you? Now, some things happen like that are good, but a lot of things happen to you like that, they're bad. And this was one of those life-taking things, not life-giving. And I said, it's not right. So we continued to talk. I was reminiscing with her as I was going through Atlanta. I was telling her, you know, just talking about the years that I've known him. And we were in the second grade together. That's where we met. And we were good friends all the way through grammar school. We graduated grammar school together, rode the same bus every day. We went to what was then called junior high. Now it's middle school. We went to that together. We went to high school together. We graduated high school together. And it was because of Darrell that I went to college. And we rode to Atlanta together. We roomed together. We graduated college together. Judy and I married, and he and Terry married not too long after that. We have this history, you know, and I was reminiscing with her about all the history. And Darrell is one of these people that you want to smack because they're so good. You know, you want to punch them because they never do anything wrong. And spending that much quality time with him, living with him, riding with him, doing life with him for all those years and doing all those experiences. I never one time heard him cuss. I never saw him get angry. I never saw him mad at anyone. I never saw anyone mad at him. I never saw him smoke a cigarette. I never saw him drink a beer. I never saw him do anything. He's kind of a person, you know, you wished you were like. That's Darrell. Now, my friends, going to die. So we're talking, Terry and I are. I finally get on 85. We're still talking. We're about to say goodbye. And Terry said, and Delbert, what you said earlier is correct. And I didn't know what I'd said. I'd said so much. I mean, you know, imagine me saying a lot, but I didn't know what she was referencing. And she said, I asked her, I said, what did I say? And she said, it's not right. And at that moment, this series was birthed. It's not right. 4 weeks ago today, after church on Sunday, I drove down to Griffin, went to his visitation. My friend died. It's not right. I pulled in the parking lot. It's a massive funeral home, the largest ones around there. And there was no parking places. People were parking in the street and walking. I had to park a little ways away and walk. When I came into the funeral home, there was a line that went from the farthest side on the right, where Durrell was in the casket and the family was waiting. And the line went all the way back around, all the way through to the other side, to the furthest room away, where it then went in and curled around. I'd never seen anything like it. I go to a lot of funerals. That's part of my job description. And I've been to some that were very, very full, but I'd never seen anything like this. There was over 500, 600 people there. So I went and I found my place in line, and we were, standing there, and everybody was talking about Durrell. And the guy in front of me had worked with him. Durrell was his boss at the phone company. And so he was, we were chatting, and he told me about his working for me. He said, he's the best boss I've ever had. He said he never got mad. He was always level. He was always fair. He was always straight. He said, I never met anybody like him. And I said, I know what you mean. So he's asking me, about my relationship with him, and I got to share, and I had a pretty unique one. Everybody was talking in accolades of Durrell. And I knew he had touched my life, but I didn't realize, he's not a preacher, but he had touched so many people just with his goodness and his righteousness. So I stand in line about an hour and a half. Finally get to him. There's my friend in the casket. It's not right. He had two sons and three grandchildren. And so I see him and I hug his wife and shake the hands of his sons and give my condolences. I leave. The next day, I go to his funeral. We bury one of the best people I've ever known in my life. What's right about that? It's not right. And I'm just about certain every single person here has a similar Durrell story. It's not right. What's right about death? What's right about a man? He's 9 months older than me. What's right about him dying at that age? He had so much more to give. He could impart his goodness and his righteousness into his children and to his grandchildren. What's right about that? We began this series back Thanksgiving, week before last. And, of course, I didn't preach last week. And I preached you a message that was called, Thank God for Everything. Now, how do you do that? How do you thank God? How does a wife thank God for the death of her husband? How do children thank God for the death of their father? How do grandchildren thank God for the death of their grandfather? It's not right. But you see, what I want to communicate to you is that we're all going to hit things that's not right. It's not that you won't experience these things. It's that what are you going to do with them when you experience those things? Are you going to let them get you down? Maybe even get mad at God, turn your back on God? Or is there a way to take the trouble that we all face and turn it into triumph and turn it into a blessing? And there is. But there's so many things that it's not right in life. What's right about somebody who's been diligent about working and saving money with their finances, being diligent with their finances and put money back and invest in stocks, and then the stock market crashes and they lose everything and they can't retire, and or some swindler comes along and takes their money? What's right about that? They haven't done anything wrong. What's right about it? Somebody who goes to work and has worked for a company for years and years and years, and they go in and the company's got to do cutbacks, and they're the one they're going to cut back. They've been at work on time. They've worked diligently. They've worked hard. They've been there for a long time. And they don't have income. They don't have an occupation that they can go and draw income from. What's right about that? They didn't do anything wrong. What's right about somebody who takes care of their bodies? They exercise. They try to eat well. But then they have heart attacks. They have heart congestive failure. They have this heart disease going on in their life. Or they contract cancer. What's right about that? They've done everything right. What's wrong? What's right about a child dying? Or an infant dying? What's right about that? They've done nothing wrong. See, it's not about whether it's right or not. It's about what do we do with what it's not right. What's right with a woman who is raped or a child that's molested? What's right with somebody who's murdered? What's right about mama or daddy dying? Our sister dying, our brother dying, our aunt or uncle or my cousins dying. What's right about that? But the scriptures tell us that we will have many, many it's not right times. That we will have trouble. We will have times in our lives, again and again, where it's not right. So what I want to do over the next couple of weeks is there's a passage in the book of James, and it begins at chapter 2 and goes through verse 2, and it goes through verse 12. And I want to spend some time on this because I think this is probably the most insightful passage concerning what I'm talking about. And I want to take a couple of weeks and see if we can get our heads wrapped around. What do we do with it's not right? What do we do with trouble? What do we do with situations in time? How we can turn these troubles into blessings. But we can change it instead of it knocking us down and stressing us out and causing us all kind of physical and emotional and spiritual problems. What can we do to turn that around so that it blesses us? Is there a way? Yes, there is. And I want to talk about this. So let me read it to you. It's in the book of James, chapter 1, beginning at verse 2. It says this. Consider it pure joy. What kind of joy? Is that how you think? Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever, in other words, it's inevitable, whenever you face trials or trouble of many kinds. Because there is a because of the trials and the trouble that you face. Because you know that the testing of your faith develops something in you, develops perseverance. And perseverance must finish its work so that. There's a so that. Every trouble and every trial that you and I go through, there's a so that. There's a because. So that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. Now watch this, because I want to ask you a question. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. What is anything involve? Everything involves everything. But this person isn't going to get any of it. Correct? So he's not going to receive anything from the Lord. So from where does salvation come? Does salvation come from the Lord? I just want to plant a little seed, because next week we're going to be talking about it a great deal. But the way I read this and what it means is this man is not receiving his salvation. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all of his ways. The brother in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his high position, but the one who is rich should take pride in his low position, because he will pass away like a wild flower. We all will. For the sun rises and scorches, and scorching heat, and withers the plant. Its blossom falls, and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich man will fade away even while he goes about his business. And here it is. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test. So your trial is nothing more than a test. When he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. You can turn your trials and your troubles and your times of testing into blessings. But it's going to require, what I want us to look at today is three things. You've got to find some way to consider it joy, pure joy. Somehow you've got to find a way to do that. Number two, you've got to stand through the times of testings. And you will be tested. You're going to face trouble. And third, you've got to love God. Loving God is the key to any trouble. Because if you truly love God, you will stand the test. You will stand through the time of trouble. And if you love God, you will find a way to find some kind of joy in it. And I want to talk about that. This James that we're reading from was the brother, the sibling of Jesus the Christ. He had a same mother, different dad. The father of Jesus, of course, was the Holy Spirit. The father of James, of course, was Joseph. They grew up together in the same house together. And what's so interesting is that James never thought that Jesus was the Christ. In fact, he thought Jesus had lost his mind. He thought he was a lunatic. The whole family thought Jesus had gone off the deep end. I mean, what would it take to get you to believe that your brother was the Son of God? Right? But James decided that he was. And you know what changed his mind? The resurrection. He knew his brother was crucified. Nobody survives crucifixion. Nobody makes it through a crucifixion. And he knew his brother had experienced crucifixion and had died on that cross. But he's alive. Now, that'll change your mind. That should change anybody's mind. Okay, buddy. I think you are who you say you are. Right? But what's so interesting here, and what I want to point out, is this is the only writing that we have from James, the brother of Jesus Christ, in all the scriptures. This is the only thing we've got. And he talks about a lot of things in his book, in his epistle. He talks about the tongue. He talks about prayer. He talks about trials. He talks about all kinds of things in there. But the very first thing James wants to talk about is trouble. Trouble. Why? Why would that be the very first thing that somebody would want to talk about? Here's why. It's because every single person can relate to it. Every single person can learn from this. Because every single person who has ever lived, including Jesus Christ, had trouble. Went through trials. Went through times of testing. That's why. So what I want to do, see, is I want to read you a lot of scriptures about trouble. And I want to see that trouble never goes away if it goes away at all. It doesn't go far if it goes away at all. Sometimes, you know, we're in trouble. And before we get out of this trouble, we're in another trouble. It never goes far away if it goes away at all. And what I want us to see is that you're going to have trouble. You've had trouble, and there's more trouble coming. And I'm not speaking a bad word on you. But I want you to know what to do with it when it comes. If this is true, if what I'm attempting to communicate to you is true, and we can take trouble, and we can turn it into blessing, then why not do it? Why let it beat us down? Why let it stress us out? Why let it make us sick? Why can't we just take it and do what James says here and make it become a blessing in our life? So let's look at some scriptures. And the first one is from Job. Remember Job? We're going to maybe take a week and just talk about Job. Job was familiar with trouble. Job knew all about trouble. And here's what Job says in Job chapter 5 and verse 7. It says, yet man is born to trouble. You're born to trouble. As surely as sparks fly upward. If you've ever seen a fire, you know, in the fireplace or outside in a campfire or whatever, the sparks are going up, and it's a natural thing for them to do. Trouble is natural. It's natural. We consider it something strange, but it's natural. It's a part of life. And then in Job chapter 14 and verse 1, it says, man born of woman. Now that should get just about all of us. Man born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. So if you have a mother, you're having trouble. You have trouble, not because of your mother, but because you're human. David said it this way, as David is talking to the Lord. Psalms 22:11 says this, do not be far from me, for trouble is near, and there is no one to help. Have you ever had a trouble where no one could help you? You will, if you haven't. You're going to hit a trouble, and nobody's going to be able to help you except God. So you're going to cry out, like we were talking about earlier. You know, there are no atheists in foxholes. And when you're going to hit a trouble, and you're going to cry out to God, don't go far from me, Lord. Don't go far. Because trouble is near. Jesus said this in Matthew 6:34. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble for its own. Every day has trouble. Every single day, you're going to have some trouble. What are you going to do with it? It's going to beat you down? You're going to turn it into a blessing. You know, a couple of weeks back, we did that short series on marriage. And we looked at 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 7. And verse 7 was talking about the amazing gift of life. The greatest gift that God can give us is the gracious gift of life. And we saw that inside of the greatest gift God can give us, the greatest gift life can give us is marriage. It's in marriage that we learn love. It's in marriage that we feel fulfillment. It's in marriage we have family. It's in marriage we have intimacy. It's in marriage we feel a completeness. It's in a contentment. It's in marriage that we experience all the good things that God has for us. Marriage. But in marriage, the greatest gift life can give us, you're going to have many troubles. And this is what the apostle said in 1 Corinthians 7:28. It says this, but those who marry will face many troubles. Now, if you've ever been married, how many would agree with that, right? Let me finish reading it. Many troubles in this life, right now. You're going to have many troubles, and I want to spare you this. What is he talking about? Well, when you're single, you have enough trouble. But when you marry, you double your trouble. Right? Because it's not just your troubles anymore. Now it's your spouse's trouble. And then you've got children. Right? Now they're at least tripled. You got many troubles going on here, and then you got in-laws, outlaws, and aliens that are all around that are working in this thing too, and you got their troubles. You got many troubles. You can't avoid trouble. Nobody is immune to trouble. Jesus said this in John 16:33. I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. Hallelujah. In this world, in this cosmos, in this world, you will have trouble. So if you're in this world, you're going to have trouble. Yet, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So what we got to do is get in Jesus and we can overcome this trouble too. And then the apostle says in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 8. And I'm going to read this from the King James, just like how it says it. We are troubled on every side. It troubles all around you. It's going to come at you from all kind of angles. Yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but not in despair. Trouble is to be expected. It's going to come at you from every angle. It's going to hit you from every side. You're going to have trouble. Okay, where you go, what you do. If you're in this world, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have trouble with people. People are going to make you angry. They're going to criticize you. Everybody's not going to like you. They're going to talk about you. And they're going to cause you trouble. You're going to have trouble in occupation. If you have a job, if you work, you have an occupation, your occupation is going to cause you trouble. You're going to have trouble with your friends. Friends will turn on you. Friends will cause you trouble. You're going to have trouble with family. Outlaws, in-laws, aliens. You're going to have trouble with spouse. You're going to have trouble with the kids. You're going to have trouble. If you're a student in school, you're going to have trouble. You're going to have trouble if you're in school, because there's just trouble everywhere. Eventually, if you haven't yet, you will have trouble with your health. And you will have trouble with death. When mama dies, or daddy dies, or sister dies, or brother dies, or it's trouble. And it comes at you from every single angle. So you're going to have trouble. You're born for trouble. As sure as sparks fly upward, you're going to have trouble. If you had a mother, you're going to have trouble, not because of your mother, because you're a human. Trouble is always near. And sometimes you're going to hit trouble that nobody can get you out of but God. You ought to know by now. Every day has trouble. Every single day. Sufficient today is the trouble thereof. If you're married, you're going to have trouble. Many kinds of it. If you're in this world, you're going to have trouble. And trouble is going to come at you from every single angle that there is. You're going to have trouble. Now, James says an interesting thing. He says, trials of many kinds. It's four English words. It's two Greek words. And I want to take a look at these two words. The first word that I want to look at that's translated many kinds is an extremely interesting word. So let's take a look at that one. It's the Greek word poukilos. And what it means is various colors. Isn't that interesting? Various colors. This is many kinds. Various colors. Variegated. So what James is doing here is he's not telling you that you're going to have a lot of troubles, or numerically you're going to have a lot of troubles. What he's really telling us here is all the shades of colors that are coming at you. There's going to be some light pastels that aren't too difficult to handle, but there's going to be some dark black ones and some dark navy blue ones, and there's going to be some dark colors that are going to come also at you. All shades, all flavors, all colors. It's like a rainbow that's coming at you. You're going to have many kinds of troubles. And when you enter any of them, James says, here's how you handle them. And then I want to look at this other word that we have here. It's trials. Trials. This is extremely interesting here. It's the Greek word parosmos. And what it means is an experiment. Now, let me talk a minute. Take that down just a second. When you go into a trial, into a trouble, when you have trouble, you are an experiment. Now, I know we don't like to think of it, like God's doing an experiment on me, but that's exactly what's happening. We don't have any trouble going to the doctor. How many has ever gone to the doctor and he says or she says, we'll try this on you? What are they saying? I'm going to experiment on you. If this doesn't work, we'll try this on you. And we don't have any trouble because we know that's going to give us hope for health. Why do we get upset with God then when he's trying to help us? When he's doing an experiment on us, well, let's try this. Maybe this will help him or her. Well, let's try this. I mean, ever felt like God was just messing with you? See, what he's doing is he's experimenting on you. And every time you hit a trouble, God is doing an experiment to see what you're going to do. If I can help you. He loves us so much, he experiments on us. Going on now, put it back up and let's read the rest of the definition. Experiment, attempt. He's attempting to do something. It's a trial. You're on trial when you go through a trouble. Approving. He's trying to prove something through you. Now, I hate the way the King James Version translates this word. The way the King James Version says it is when you enter into various temptations. As though we're soliciting evil, you know? It's like a sin thing, you know, when you enter into a temptation of sin. That's not what it means at all. What it means is the plain everyday troubles and trials and things that you're going to face every single day. It's not talking about sin. It's talking about the things you're going to face tomorrow. So when we go into these things, what do we do? How do we handle this stuff, you know? When James began this thing, he began with this mind-boggling statement. And when you read it, you say, what? You're kidding me. And let me read it to you. It's in James chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. It says, consider it pure joy. Pure joy, my brothers, whenever, because it's a certainty, whenever you face trials or troubles of many kinds, many colors, many shades, many go through many experiments, because. Would everybody just say because back to me on the count of three? One, two, three. Because. What does that mean? There's a because of you're going through this trial. There's a because of this trouble. Because you know, or you should know, or we should know, but we don't know. We think something strange is going on. We actually, Christians, think we shouldn't be going through trouble. Because we're Christians. And Christians shouldn't go through trouble. How many glad that's not true? Because if that was true, none of us would be Christians, right? He says, because you know, we should know, that the testing of your faith, your trouble is a test. And what is testing is your faith. Are you authentic? Or are you just playing church? The testing of your faith, now watch this next word, develops. Develops. God is developing something in us. Or he's trying to. He's attempting to. He's attempting to develop something in us, an ability we don't have. A perseverance so that the next trouble that comes along, we'll handle it better. And another one is coming. They're lined up. And so he said, I'm going to work this into you so that the next one is maybe a bigger one. You'll be able to handle it. And so he's developing this in us, develops this perseverance. And he says, consider it pure joy. What? Delbert, are you kidding me? Delbert, that's so easy for you to stand up there and say that to us. You've never been through the trouble that I've been through. Oh, so you think you're the only one that's ever had trouble, huh? No, everybody has trouble. I might not be through the same one you're going through, but I've been through something similar. Because we're all going to go through trouble. What I want you to hear me say and what I want us to get in our heads today is considering it pure joy is the very first step in turning your trouble into triumph, turning your trouble into a blessing. It's the first step. And if we don't take the first step, we don't take any steps. Well, how do you do that, Delbert? I mean, how do you consider it pure joy when you go into these troubles and stuff? How am I supposed to do that? It's impossible. No, it's not impossible. And that's what he says here. And I want you to think about this now. He says, consider it pure joy. You got to, before you get to the pure joy part, you got to consider. You got to consider it. What does that mean? You got to ponder it. You got to think about it. See, usually when we ram into a trouble, we get so aggravated and frustrated and angry, we cuss, we beat things, we get so upset, we get, you know, anxiety build up and stressed out, we make ourselves sick and mad, we hit stuff, we make people upset. Because we're hitting a trouble. James says, before you do that, just consider. Take your time here. Deliberate on it. Reflect on it. Ponder it. Process it. I love the way the King James Version writes it. The King James Version says, count it all joy. Count it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. In other words, get it into perspective. Get it into something that you can look at. Get it into something that you can count. Get it into something that you can see and analyze. What you're analyzing and what you're wanting to see is what's in this I can consider joy. What is in this that is good? What is working in this thing that God's trying to work in me and through me? How can I turn this from a defeat into a victory? How can I turn this trouble into a blessing? And you're analyzing it and you're processing it and you're considering it. Because in there somewhere, just as easy as it is to be negative, there's something in there somewhere that you can be positive. How many of us have ever done that? How many of us have ever, when we hit the trouble, we sit down and say, well, let me consider this. Let me consider pure joy in this thing. See, we don't do it. But if we did do it, what could it change? We could change it. We could become thankful. Somehow in there, there's something we talked about. Thank God for everything. Something in there. You're not thanking Him for the trouble so much as you're thanking Him for what He's doing through the trouble. So there's some things here that I want us to really grasp and understand about this thing. Consider it pure joy. But the first step of turning your trouble into a blessing in your life is considering it pure joy. Now, once we've considered it pure joy, once we've pondered it, once we've deliberated it, once we counted it, once we processed it, once we've done this thing of considering, now we can start working on the pure joy part. He says, pure joy. What is that about? What's pure joy? I was thinking about an illustration that I could maybe give you. I think I have a good one. You can liken it to maybe water, you know, pure water. You know, you don't want to drink water out of the bathtub, do you? Or out of the toilet? How about a swimming pool, you know, with all these kids in there? You want to drink that? Why do you think they put chlorine in there? Right? You don't want to drink, you don't, because that's going to make you sick. You don't want to put that into you. It's going to make you sick. It's the same way with pure joy. Don't let stress or anxiety or anger or profanity mess up your joy. It defiles it. It brings all of this mess into it. All these impurities. And you don't want to put that into you because that's going to make you sick. So much of our lives are sickness because of stress. Because we've lost our joy. Or we've contaminated our joy with worry and anxiety and stress and anger. James says, consider it. And then maybe you can keep out the impurities. And you can put the good joy into your life. And it'll be like a water that flushes you and washes out all the impurities and brings healing and health into the situation. So consider it pure joy. In every trouble and trial and testing that you or I ever face, there's a purpose behind it. Every one of them. And the primary purpose behind a trial that we're talking about here, a trouble that you and I are going to go through, the primary purpose of it is to give us answers to the questions that we all have. And the questions are something like this. Am I an authentic believer? Is my faith real? Or am I an imposter? Just doing religion. Just doing the church thing. How can I know if I am authentic? Am I really saved? When I die, when my body dies, will I awake into the glories of heaven? In the presence of the Lord Jesus Christ? Or when my body dies, will I awake in the flames of hell, in torment and darkness and evil? Those are good questions. And God doesn't want us to go through life without those questions answered. And the only way that I know to show you whether you're authentic or an imposter is how you handle trouble. How do you handle trouble? This is what James is saying. It's a test. You're on trial. You're an experiment to see what you're really made of. If Christ is really in you. And how you handle the trouble is the only thing that I know of that will determine if you're authentic or not. And we've all, have we not? We've all seen people who come to church and they attend church. They go through the motions. They went through the Roman road. They prayed the sinner's prayer. They attend. Maybe they serve a little bit. Maybe they give a little bit. Maybe they're coming regularly, and on the outside they appear to be a Christian. They raise their hands. They clap their hands. They sing their songs. But then they hit a trouble. And here's the process. Their attendance begins to fall back. You don't see them as frequently. They're given stops. And they're angry with God. Because God didn't perform like they thought God should. God didn't fix this problem. God didn't take care of this. God didn't do this. And they shake their fist at God and they cuss God and they walk away from God. You've seen it. I've seen it way too much. We've all seen this happen. What I'm pondering and what I'm wanting you to ponder as well is this person saved if they failed the test of trouble? Can God do anything for that person? Will God do anything? Should that man think God would give him anything? He is the wave that's blown about. He's a double-minded person, unstable in all of his ways. What about you? If you failed to a trouble, the trouble knocked you down and you shook your fist at God and got mad at God because he didn't do what you said to do, would you still be saved? Next week is my plan. I want to talk about this. I want to talk about the eternal security teaching, the once saved, always saved teaching. I want to talk about the perseverance of the saints. I want to talk about this next week. I think it's so vital that we get a handle on it, that we know. How do I know if I'm a Christian, if I'm real? And how do I know I'm not? So we're going to start there. So you might want to come to this one the next week, you know. You might want to tell somebody, hey, you might ought to hear this one. What I want to do is I want to jump to verse 12 as I close out. And I want to look at this and make a couple of comments in relation to what I've just said. And then make a few more comments and then we'll pray. So in James chapter 1, verse 12, it says this. Blessed is the person, the man, the woman. Blessed is the person who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, your trial is nothing more than a test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. Now, leave that up there just a second, because I want you to answer this thought, this question. Does everyone receive the crown of life? Does everyone, what is receiving the crown of life determined by? What two things in that verse determine whether you receive the crown of life, whether anyone receives the crown of life? Number one is you stand the test. And the only way you're going to do that is to consider it pure joy. You stand the test. Number two, you love God. And if you walk away on God, you shake your fist at him. That's not an example of love. What I'm wanting you to see is everyone's not going to receive the crown of life. Delbert, what is the crown of life? It's eternal life that you will receive upon his appearing when he comes again. If you're true, if you've stood the test, and if you love God, you'll receive it. If you have not, you will not. But you can take your trouble and you can turn it into victory. You can turn it into triumph. You can turn it into blessing. You got to consider it pure joy. You got to stop and think about it. Consider it pure joy. You got to go through the test. You got to realize that I'm being in a test here. Yeah? And then you got to love God. You got to love him. If you will, you're going to find yourself in a far better place. Now, this coming week, you're going to face trouble. In fact, probably before the day's over, you're going to face trouble. What I want you to do is consider it. I want you to stop, sit down, process it, deliberate, refresh your mind about it. What's going on here? Where in this trouble can I find something to be joyful about? Where can I find some pure joy that will flush out the stress and that will flush out of me the anxiety and the worry and the anger? Process it. God will show you. He says, we read it. We'll talk about it eventually. If you lack wisdom as to how, ask him. He'll give it to you. But process that. Then deliberate on it. Stand to the test. You're in a test. And make sure you continue your love relationship with God. You will turn your trouble into blessing. You'll have a blessed life. Let me pray for us. Father.